Hello and welcome to the new season of the Honey Kids Asia podcast. We're bringing you the parenting playbook. My name is Ange. I'm a mum of two boys, Xavier, who is 12, and Marcel, who is 10. We're excited to kick off this season with some engaging discussions and expert guests who will help us navigate the ups and downs of modern parenting. In today's episode, we're diving into a question that many parents are looking for insights and advice on. When should you give your kid a smartphone? For this discussion, I'll be joined by Lauren Adlam, who's a mum of four and the founder of Zone, a kids-only app that promotes positivity and is designed to nurture Gen Alpha, so kids between 8 and 14 years old. Enjoy. Hello, Lauren. It's so lovely to have you on the podcast today. Thanks so much for chatting with us. Firstly, it would be great, before we get into our chat today about smartphones, it would be great to learn a little about you.
Absolutely. I know a lot about me. So my name's Lauren Adlam. I'm in Sydney, Australia. I have four tweens and teens, and I am the founder of a new app called Zone. And Zone is all about positivity, good news, and a safe space online for kids. Which is why it's, you know, obviously really appropriate, and I'm grateful to have the opportunity to talk today about smartphones, because they're both a blessing and a curse, I think, for tweens and teens.
Absolutely. So, Lauren, I'd love to start with a little bit of a phrase that we've heard a lot on social media and also from our own children. And I heard this from my son, which is, "Mum, can I please have my own phone? All my friends have one. I'm the last one." And it's a question that so many of the parents that are listening today and friends of mine are on the receiving end of. And I mean, this is the big kind of question to kick us off. What age do you think is appropriate for kids to get their first smartphone and why?
Look, it's interesting. Every kid's the last kid, aren't they? If only we could all have a conference about that to catch them out on that phrase. And I wish there was a straight answer to say there is a certain age where I think it's safe and sensible for a child to have a smartphone. It really depends on the child. You know, every child has a different level of maturity, a different level of engagement with their phone. You know, some become really hooked on it. Others, it's just a device they use every now and then to tap in and out. Look, I know for my kids, they're all slightly different, and the younger ones probably got one sooner than the older ones, because for me, it was really helpful. It was, and I could have given them a dumb phone. I didn't need to get them a smartphone, probably. But for me to be able to know where they are, for them to be able to contact me, it gave me a whole lot of freedom. I wish there was a straight answer to that question, and I hate being a fence sitter, but I think it really depends on the child.
Yeah. And obviously, I mean, within reason, right? When we're assuming that five-year-olds aren't being given smartphones.
Look, some parents do, and I don't agree with that at all.
Yeah.
You know, for me, for mine, it was when they were independently traveling to and from school is when I knew that I needed to be able to contact them as and when required, and likewise them for me. On that, again, they could have had a dumb phone. They could have had a watch that I could communicate with them on. Logistically, they were getting an old device of myself or my husband's, and so that's why they got those phones. But yeah, I certainly wouldn't do it until they have the ability to independently navigate the world on their own physically. And look, I think that also then leads into the fact that we still need to have absolute boundaries and measures for these kids when they're online.
And I definitely want to get to boundaries today. But the thing that I kind of wanted to touch on first is, we've talked about the fact that our kids, a lot of the time, if they don't have something, they'll say, "All my friends have it." So we're talking about obviously phones in this instance, but also things like that come on the phone, right? So for me, it's being really navigating how to be that uncool parent who says, there are rules around how you use your phone, and there are times you can have it and times you can't, and you can't have social media, for instance, right now. How do we navigate that? How do we navigate that dilemma of being maybe the strict parent or the uncool parent, you know, when we're talking in relation to our kids?
Look, again, it's really tricky, and I am a big believer in my house, my rules. And so, you know, if they say so-and-so is allowed Snapchat, TikTok, et cetera, well, that's great, but that's their parents' decision, and that's based on that what their relationship is with their child. So, and once again, it's something else that we have to navigate as parents, and these days there's a lot of things to navigate. I remember even back when my kids were really young and they were misbehaving, you'd go, right, no TV, And you think, far out, that's only hurting me here because then now I've got to actually entertain you. So it's really tricky. And I think it's really important to have those boundaries in place and to say, you know, you're not getting Snapchat until 13 because that's the legal age or whatever that age might be, and giving them the reasons and making them understand that you're just doing that to try to protect them and to keep them safe. And, you know, I know a lot of people that create contracts with their kids that they literally have it outlined and they review that contract every 3 to 6 months because kids change. And look, I'm probably not the best person to advise on this in all respects because my daughter did get Snapchat early. And I made the judgment call on that because literally I knew all her friends were communicating through it. So she was missing out on opportunities because it was communicated through Snapchat and it was leading into the pandemic and different things. So I made a judgment call with boundaries where I had access to what she was doing and saying to let her do it and let her have access. It worked out well. And I think it's really important to have those lines of communication really open with your kids because it doesn't always work out well. So then all of a sudden, if it starts to turn bad, they need to be able to talk to you about it. And this is where, again, I think open communication is really important because you don't want them trying to do something behind your back. So then when things go bad, they don't talk to you about it.
This is the real dilemma, isn't it? Because if we're too strict or perceived to be parents that our kids will, in quotations, be in trouble if they do something, then they're not going to come to us and confide in us. But then there's also the challenge that is, I don't want my child to have something right now. And it becomes this really, like, and certainly my kind of take with it or with my children has been, explain to them, rather than just saying no, explain, look, this is why I don't think you need Snapchat right now. And this is why, you know, there's going to be rules around when your phone cuts off at night and establishing, as you say, all those boundaries. It's still a work in progress and it's definitely difficult. And there's definitely been times, and, you know, it's part of being a teenager, I think, is, or coming into teenage years, is hiding things from your parents sometimes. But I definitely don't want the door to be closed where it's like, I'm going to get in trouble if I ask mum for this. She's definitely just going to say no. She doesn't see my perspective. Yeah, so it's definitely a challenge, right, Lauren?
Oh, it's such a challenge and I'm still navigating it. You know, I'm navigating with the different ages and stages of my kids and then I'll have my older kids saying, it's fine, let them have it. And I'm like, no, I'm the parent here and I'm the one that actually has the judgment call on risk and reward for these things as well. And look, and I think within your own communities, it's really great to talk to other parents and say, look, I'm going to hold out and say no to Snapchat for these reasons. Where are you at? So then when they say everyone else has got it, you know that that's not true, firstly. And secondly, to establish other ways that they can communicate so they're not missing out.
Yeah, exactly right. I mean, it also depends on the child. Certainly my son's not crazy over wanting Snapchat right now because, as you say, a lot of his friends, they just send each other messages. So they have kind of a messenger little groups, many of them, set up. And what they mostly do is just send each other YouTube clips or silly jokes or memes or whatever else. So he doesn't feel right now like he's missing out, but certainly I've said to him, I don't want you to have social media yet because I don't think you need it and I don't think it's age appropriate right now. He's 12. But I did say to him, if it's something that you feel you're left out of, come and talk to me and we'll chat about it. But for now, and he seems okay with that right now.
See, I think that's the perfect approach, absolutely perfect. And it sounds like you've got that open communication with him. So he knows your reasons and he knows there's an opportunity. I actually, when one of my kids wanted social media, I asked for a presentation. So they did a PowerPoint as to the reasons. And so I said, it's not just something I'm going to say yes to instantly. You need to actually engage in the pros and the cons and well, let's weigh this up together. And actually, I do that with most apps where I still have parental controls on where I have to approve the apps for my kids. And we'll look at the reviews together and say yes or no and make a judgment call on it. But it's another thing to add to our parenting list and it's another thing to police. And it's actually really hard.
Yeah. Circling back, Lauren, we talked about obviously one of your children getting Snapchat a little early based on kind of circumstance and their readiness. And I know you've got 4 kids. I've got 2. And certainly my younger one wants everything his older brother has and will probably start demanding it, not that he's going to get his way, but he's going to start kind of pushing to get those things potentially earlier than his brothers had them. And I certainly know coming, you know, having siblings, that there's a fairness that comes into play, right, as a parent. So even though my older son may theoretically be more ready than my younger son was, if I give one something earlier than the other and not to the other, there's a fairness point that comes up, right, where they say, this isn't fair. And certainly you can't say to them, well, you're not ready and your brother is. They won't get that. So how have you navigated that? Is that with four very, I'm sure, different kids? And how do you kind of navigate if you've had to say no or yes to someone earlier or younger and that fairness question comes in?
Look, it's kind of self-selected in a funny way, because so like my youngest is probably less into it than the older ones were. But I also think I feel more confident because I've had the experience with the older ones. So it does self-select. But for, I mean, for all of them, that phone, it was when they were getting a bus independently to school. And so there was no gray over that. Although interestingly, my eldest moved schools when he was older than when my younger ones did. So as a result, my younger ones actually got access to a phone in age before he did. But in terms of the functionality and the reason for it, it was at the same stage. So yeah, look, it's another thing. And you can't say to your younger one, oh, you're not as mature, or you're not this, because then they don't feel very good about themselves. But I think that's where the older ones come in too, to really help you. So you say, buddy, let's just talk this down a bit. These social media apps are not that important. Prove it to your younger brother. And so then they become a little bit of a team with you to go, you know what, it's not all that, you know, it's made out to be. And my other thing is I insist that I'm friends with them on those social media apps as well, so I can see what they're doing and posting. And to be honest, mine are stalkers, not talkers. Like, they don't actually post much. They just watch what other people post. And I think that's okay.
Yeah, for sure. Now, we touched on it a little bit. I'd love to talk more about how you established boundaries. Any advice for our listeners around what do we do? How do we establish those boundaries when we're giving a child a smartphone?
Look, I think number one is role modeling ourselves and knowing when to put the phone down. I'm not very good at it all the time, but it's knowing that, you know what, this is downtime for the phones, you know, mandatory time in terms of after hours, bedrooms, dinner time, meal times, before school, whatever works for your family. I'm not here to say you need to do this for your child, but you need to work out what works best for you. And you can see the way it impacts your kids in real time. And so then it's putting those boundaries in place. And it's much easier to start strong and to ease off than to start loose and then having to put the boundaries in. That would be my advice. So, yeah, I mean, I have definitely put boundaries in place in terms of spot checks on phones, accessibility to what they're doing, and conversations about it. You know, I often say, what did you see on TikTok today? What did you learn? And then we might then talk about the media implications of that. A lot of the time it's really fun stuff and it's news articles and different things. And we'll talk about whether it's a reputable source, whether there's fact in it, or whether it's just something a bit silly, and then how these different trends come up. I mean, as you'd know, some of the language these kids use, which comes from TikToks, YouTube, et cetera, I often have to say, what does that mean? And so they're teaching me in real time at the same time as well. And I also, for me, mandatory, I have to approve what they can download. And as much as they complain about it, it's mandatory. Bad luck. I pay for your phone, my rules.
Absolutely. I've learned a whole new language, I think, through my 12-year-old. And he actually finds it quite hilarious teaching me the different words.
Oh, yeah. So I had dinner with my three younger ones on the weekend. We just went out for a quick bite to eat. And they were talking in all this language. I kept saying, pardon? What? And they were laughing their heads off. Yeah. So it's a bit of a secret code, but, you know, it works for them.
Yes. We have a writer at Honey Kids who actually wrote an article about this with all the different words and phrases that, you know, alphas and Gen Z, it's kind of in the vernacular now. And what I was so proud of was there's about five or six words that I already knew. So I just felt very... I'm still cool. Like, the young people that are making up all these words. When it comes to boundaries, do you find that your kids have ever kind of pushed back and said, no, that's not fair, or challenged you in terms of all of that? And have you kind of had to change your approach, or has it always been quite collaborative and they're kind of on board? Okay, I get it, mom. Or are there times where you've gone, actually, you're right, I should give you more time, or it's okay to have that app? Or
look, probably more the latter, where I've gone, I've been a bit hard, and then I've understood the reasoning behind it. Look, I'm lucky in that my kids are busy, they're active, they're not on their devices as much as some other kids. And for some kids, their devices are their lifeline. It connects them with other like-minded people from different places around the world. So I'm not here to say certain amounts of time and different apps are right for, you know, as a blanket rule. So I'm pretty lucky. Typically, I will question anything they ask to download, and I do the spot checks, as I say. Look, to be honest, I've probably found more issues with text messages than anything else, to see different language used. And then I will say, buddy, this isn't appropriate, and talk through why. And then, you know, at one point, actually, with my youngest, I said to him, I think you should talk to the friend that you're talking to say why this isn't appropriate. And it wasn't anything at each other. It was just words they shouldn't be using. And then I thought, that's too much responsibility for him at that age. So I said, I'm going to call his mum. And that was actually a really useful conversation to say, neither of you are in trouble, but we're just showing you there's a village around you to protect you from using things that aren't appropriate. So I think, yeah, typically I've been pretty lucky that, and we haven't had, to my knowledge, any negative interactions online. We haven't had any online bullying, et cetera. But I'm very aware that it's definitely possible, and it's teaching them to be as positive and good online citizens as they possibly can, and to call out bad behaviour if they see it.
Mm. I know we talked about, well, so Lauren and I actually did a live recently on Honey Kids Asia. You can go over to our Instagram and actually watch that. It's a similar conversation to the one we're having now. One of the things that we talked about was in terms of raising the social media age. So there's a lot of talk in Asia, in Australia, in the US about increasing the age that you can access social media. I believe is it 12 right now, Lauren?
At the moment it's 13.
13, sorry. Yeah.
Yeah, 13. And then the Australian government want to raise it to 16. And it's a really interesting conversation. And I think the most important part of it is it's a conversation that's taking place. Look, I think it's a very difficult thing to mandate, and I don't know that anyone quite knows how to do it. And some experts say it's absolutely necessary, and many experts say it's actually going to make the problem worse, because kids are still going to be exposed to things online that they then won't talk to parents about. And to my point before, you know, for some kids who may not be surrounded geographically by like-minded other people, having access to a global community is actually really important. So, I mean, as I said over on our Insta, I would much rather the pressure be put back on the massive global social media companies to change the way content is moderated and the way it's changed the algorithms, basically, as opposed to putting more pressure on parents and kids to change the ages, et cetera. And, you know, I'd love to know the stats, and I don't think we'll ever know, but how many are on social media under the age of 13? I think it's a lot.
Yeah, I think you're right. And I mean, I'm very torn on this subject, because you do read a lot of the really sad stories, right, of kids that actually were happy kids and quite kind of dealing with school in a normal way that every child does, ups and downs, and then social media is thrown into the mix, something's happened, they've embarrassed themselves, or they've said the wrong thing, or people have just, you know, perhaps left them out of a conversation, and then suddenly there's serious things that can happen where children have taken their life, or they're very depressed, their parents are really struggling with how to support their child. So I'm very much of the space that I remember what it was like to grow up for myself, right? And you'd have a really horrible day at school, and perhaps you have really some issues with your friends. You could go home and detach from all that. So you didn't have a phone in your hand on the school bus home. You just get on the bus and you'd have to read a book or look out the window and kind of think things through. And then you get home and it's like this safe haven away from all the crap that's going on. And by the next day, a lot of the time, the issue of the day before didn't seem as bad. The two people that were maybe fighting get to school and realize, oh, it wasn't that big a deal. Whereas if we were able to continue it on our phone, you can see that a pile on, and just in terms of even myself, you know, when I am on my phone too much, I know that it changes my mood and I know that I need to detach. So I'm really torn, long way of saying that, because I do feel like if they didn't have social media or a phone at all, until, you know, a smartphone at all until they were 16, I don't think that's anything other than a positive in a way. I know that that's not practical and it's not realistic, but there is part of me, like the kind of, you know, the kind of positive part of me that's like, but if that happened, that would be so amazing.
I agree entirely. I just don't know how it's possible. I really don't. And, you know, Gen Alpha are criticized for being so screen addicted, etc. They've grown up with our phones in their faces. So it's not their fault, you know, but they're also, there's positives that they're educated and they're digitally connected and they're global thinkers and all of that. And so as much as you'd have to rewind time, I think, to change it. And I don't know how you do that. So yeah, I think by trying to create positive spaces online and trying to create boundaries from a parent point of view, to have that downtime, to have busy time, to have in real life time, because that's the other thing that kids often don't know how to talk to people in real life. And so we need to role model that as parents. And that's easier for some than others. You know, some people who are not comfortable talking to strangers, et cetera, that's really difficult. You know, I was in a cafe with one of my kids the other day and a man next to us was having breakfast and he struck up a conversation. He was in his 70s. And I spoke to this man for about 35 minutes. And afterwards, my son looked at me and he went, that was actually cool, because we found out so much about this very interesting man and there is no way in the world he would have had that conversation without me being there. So it's role modeling that kind of stuff to show that other people are really interesting. Let's ask some questions.
You're right. And it's as you say, the horse is kind of bolted in a way. So we've just got to, as parents, I hate that all this responsibility is on us, but it actually is.
I do too.
Which is part of my whole issue. Like I just get quite cranky about this because I feel like it's all on us when it should be, as you say, on the social media companies, but also, you know, governments can come in and mandate certain things that between the two would be helpful, but we're kind of past that right now. So, okay, it's on us. So part of what I wanted to talk to you today about is, you know, we talked a little about boundaries and having that conversation, but what are other limits and things that we can set on these phones that we give to these kids that are amazing? They can do so many things. I've got some, obviously, parental controls and tools that I use. Any that you would recommend, Lauren?
Look, I think the inbuilt parental controls, certainly in Apple, are great. I think they're excellent and they're easy to approve, but they're also easy to decline. And I know a lot of people that use lock boxes overnight where you can charge your phones in devices. They're locked with a password. And so it's just mandatory that everyone's phones go in. And, you know, I've used the excuse for years too. I use my phone as my alarm, but buy an alarm clock, lock them away, and then that's that mandatory time. I also know other people that turn the Wi-Fi off, which is tricky in smart connected houses because you need the Wi-Fi for certain things. But again, this technology exists. You can turn the Wi-Fi off just for certain devices. So then there's actually no gray, and yeah, keeping those rules in place. But yeah, I mean, I only use the inbuilt parental controls that exist. I know there are other off-the-shelf apps that can give you more control. It just depends on what your family needs.
Yeah. I think for us it was important just to set it up from the start and then you can negotiate from there. So my son's phone, he gets 2 hours a day and then all the apps switch off. And he cannot access anything other than calling or messaging before he can't message anyone before 8 o'clock in the morning and then it switches off at 9 o'clock. So it just means, and I've had some friends say, oh, you know, their kids are on the phone at night and they're finding them because they don't want to be out of like the messages that are going on that are pinging at night. And because they've actually, it's from the start, he knows he can't access it after nine. It actually doesn't come into his thought process that, and in the morning, like, you know, as we're walking to school, he'd get his phone out and he'll see messages and read them. And I'm like, great. Whereas otherwise he'd be pinged at 9 o'clock. He's already asleep. Like he's still going to bed quite early. I know that that would affect him. So I do, but because we set it up from the start, I didn't then have to say, oh, actually you can't have this. And then it's much harder to take those back. So yeah, so we've got Apple as well. I know Google have the same controls that you can use on your phones and Samsung as well. And it's really just looking up the relevant kind of guidelines for your phone. But the best thing to do is have it all controlled from yours.
Yeah, without a doubt. And look, I've had issues where, you know, my kids have little apps at school and they say, oh, we can't download the app. So you wait 24 hours. It's not going to change your life. You wait till I look at my phone. You know, I'm in a meeting or whatever, bad luck.
Now, Lauren, before we finish our chat today, we can keep going. We can keep chatting about social media. I've got actually no answers. I don't know about you.
Look, I wish I did too. And just circling back just quickly to, you know, government controls and whatever else. So I went, there was a state government, a New South Wales and South Australian state government forum on social media, a summit on social media a couple of weeks ago. And they had a concurrent youth summit where they were talking to the youth about what they wanted. And the most insightful part of the whole day was when three of the young people that were part of the youth summit reported back to the room, and their findings were, we don't want age gates because, I mean, obviously they're kids, they want to have access, but they said, we want the government to have the ability to take content down, and we want the government to be working on our behalf to make the algorithm positive. And I thought that was just so powerful. So there is some small tweaks that can be really protective online. And look, I think I hate saying the horse is bolted because it sounds quite defeatist. It has, but we can definitely train the horse. So I think, you know, with various conversations, the government can definitely make a difference.
Mm. And I do think you're right. Like we don't want to underestimate young people. And I think a lot of the time, you know, the older generation do quite often and can be quite disparaging of the younger generations, which doesn't make them listen to us. It just makes them go, oh, they're old and they don't get us, right?
It's every generation though. Every generation doesn't fully understand the ones that come after them. And this, as I say, Gen Alpha, it's not their fault. They've grown up with this technology. They've grown up in this world. So let's look at ways that we can help them thrive. Let's harness them, nurture them, because I actually think Gen Alpha are the ones that are going to fix everything for all of us. They're smart, they're driven, they're awesome. And so if we can just give them a bit of love and nurturing now rather than being disparaging, who knows what they can achieve.
100%. Now, Lauren, before we wrap up today, it's been so fantastic having this chat. Any last advice for parents who are navigating these tricky, almost impossible digital waters?
Look, I think it's all about communication. It is all about talking to your kids about what you've seen online, what they've seen online, how it makes you feel, what's appropriate and inappropriate about different things. And also, I mean, I'm a big believer of curating a feed. So if you're looking at content that's not making you feel good, get rid of it. That's your choice. It's like changing channels on a TV. So, and it's encouraging your kids to do the same. So if they're seeing stuff that's scaring them, upsetting them, or just not making them feel good about the world, get rid of it. And so as much as possible, having those really open conversations is absolutely imperative.
Thanks so much, Lauren. It's been a pleasure chatting to you again on this subject.
Thanks, Ange. I wish we had all the solutions, but we're working on it.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of the Honey Kids Asia podcast. We hope you found our conversation with Lauren helpful as you navigate the tricky world of smartphones and your kids. And look, I know that we didn't have all the answers today, but certainly it's a continuing conversation and a continuing challenge for us as parents. Now, don't forget to catch our upcoming Instagram live sessions where we'll dive into important topics such as identifying ADHD with Jolene Lim and Dr. Kavita Manakaran, and balancing encouragement with tiger parenting with Dr. Christina Wong. You can head to Honey Kids Asia on Instagram to sign up for the countdown. All the details will be also found in our show notes for today. And for more parenting tips and resources, you can head to honeykidsasia.com. Thanks for listening, and we will see you next time.